Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, who is the Executive Director of the Institute for Peace and Prosperity. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Well, good. There's been a lot in the news, and we have spoken a little bit about it, but we decided we'd wait a couple days to find out more information about what went on in Dallas. And there's been a lot of reports and a lot of opinions made. And I imagine, though, although we waited a couple days, there's still a lot to be learned about who did what and what motivated the killer and this sort of thing. But it's obviously a big deal when somebody goes out and shoots five policemen and wounds a bunch of other ones, and it's a further continuation of violence in our city, which is something that we've known about and we follow it. But this one, to me, is a little bit different. The killings are there. There's an individual with a gun. And the left responded like robots. You know, they said, see, it's the guns, it's the guns. They don't really want to talk about the gun being handled by somebody who was militarized by our U.S. military. But to me, there's one other difference. Ordinarily, if they can get any connection at all to Islam radical jihad, then the right, more excuse, we just need to drop more bombs. And this time it turns out that it's, looks like he's an admitted white racist. He hates whites. He wanted to kill whites. And I assume that is probably true. So there's a little bit of difference. The left should be more on the defense, but if not, as long as they stick to their program by going after, the guns and make that to blame. But the right is a little bit handicapped, you know, because they can't say that what we need is a greater war on terrorism because this is different. So this invites a different discussion. Well, if it isn't Islam, what is it? And it's something that I've talked about, you know, in the past about how economic policy and monetary policy and all this has changed our culture. And this should not be a surprise to a lot of people that our streets are blowing up. Mm. And I suspect it's going to continue.
You know, Adam Dick, who's a senior fellow at the Institute of Peace and Prosperity, wrote up a piece over the weekend. He wrote up an interview that you did over the weekend after the shooting. But he pointed to an article that you wrote in 2015, a speech, your predictions for 2015. And one of the main things you talked about was there's going to be a rise in inner city violence. And you went into a lot of detail about it. The two things you touched on then, and I don't know if you made the connection, but you also touched on it in the interview when she said, well, what one thing would you change?
Yeah.
And you said, well, it's got to be two. But you said this in your speech in January 2015. It's the Federal Reserve and the drug war. And I think people, if they first heard that, they said, what is he talking about? But you draw it all together.
Well, yes, there's a lot of resentment. I mean, to have this type of conflict, you have to find a reason why they're at each other. And it really didn't start last year or last month. This has been smoldering for a long time. And I think it's a reflection of a culture and a reflection of an era. I talk about an end of an era of the Keynesian economic era, and it's not working, and the poor are getting poorer, the middle class is getting wiped out, the rich get richer, the stock market is propped up, and there's a lot of resentment. And I think it shouldn't be hard for people to understand why blacks feel the resentment. Because they're out of proportion to the population. They end up in prison and they arrest, in the drug war. To me, of course, getting rid of the drug war would help a lot there. But the judicial system, I believe, is corrupt and there's no fairness there. So it goes on. And then a lot of people, especially in the minority communities, are suffer more out of proportion for economic policies. So they're poor and out of work. But where I see the real problem is there's a lot of justification for the minority community to be upset and angry, but they don't have an understanding of economics, and they have been taught for almost 100 years that they're entitled to be taken care of and that they are victims and it's never their fault, and therefore they have a right to do what government does, and that is use violence to get what they want. Mm. Nobody stops and thinks, the tool that government uses most likely is the threat of violence or violence. It's not just the preservation of the Second Amendment and the Fourth Amendment, which would be a limited role for government. It's always the use of government to benefit one group over another. And then when the system goes broke like it is, you can't have anything happen but resentment and people resorting to force, and it invites nuts to pop up, you know, and act out of proportion. Because if you try to, analyze this individual, and you might try to do that on what contributed to it, but I think there's an atmosphere, but then you come along with the nuts who are willing to overstep their bounds.
You have to wonder, and this is an issue that's bigger than we can tackle in this show, but the atomization and polarization of society in sort of the social media era, which rather than bringing people together, sometimes tends to isolate them more. And that looks like that may have been the case with the Dallas shooter. First of all, he was a JROTC, then he went into the Army Reserves, and then he did a tour in Afghanistan. And while he wasn't in combat, according to the press reports, he was in the vicinity of combat, and he heard shells, mortar shells, which may have done something to him psychologically. He had a sexual harassment problem there, which got him sent home. And I can imagine the humiliation and the shame of that on top of the other kind of led into the mix. And then he tried to get involved with some black groups, radical black groups, and they didn't want him because his character was flawed, you know, the sexual harassment problem. And so these things boiled up, and then, as you point out, the other societal factors, it makes you wonder, what made it happen?
So there is no magic one thing you can do, or even two things, because we're talking about a whole culture of violence that develops through economic and political reasons. But we also have another problem that we talk about frequently, and that is how events like this are agitated by the media. Yeah. You know, whether it's the war in Iraq or war on our streets, the media isn't very helpful. I mean, they stir up the racial tensions very often, and this is something that is done routinely. Then you have the black leaders stir up tensions too, and they take advantage of this and come in and stir things up. And you have Al Sharpton and a few others come in and just want to agitate and say it's all racism. It's all whites hate the blacks, and it's white policemen killing black. But I saw a statistic the other day that really amazed me, because I asked a few other people that didn't know the answer. I would have answered incorrectly myself. What percentage of the people killed in a year by the police are white versus black? And it turns out that twice as many whites get killed by the police than blacks. And I don't think there's very many people in this country who would say that. Are twice as many riots on the streets caused by white people being killed by the police? They could be killed by white or black police. And they say that if a black policeman kills a white civilian, you probably won't hear too much about it. There probably won't be demonstrations, because I think racism is very, very big in here, but it's that fertile field for that where people have been taught this. This isn't like these people wake up and say, you know, I think it's all the whites' fault. Mm-hmm. They have been conditioned to this, that there's always an advantage. And yes, there's terrible situations. And like I say, the justice system is not justice for blacks when it comes to enforcing the drug laws. Mm-hmm. And there's so much reason for that. But if we don't understand that and just say, well, nope, it's just racism, and therefore we have to combat it, and then you end up with this guy. Evidently, he wrote and said, and a black chief of police gets up and said, well, you know, this guy said that his whole purpose in life on this episode was to kill white policemen. Mm. And he killed, five white policemen and injured a lot of other ones. So I think there's a lot of racism there, but I think it's secondary. I don't think it starts with racism. I think it starts with some bad government policies, what I think.
Yeah, you know, you make a great point about the media, because the media, There's so much pressure to get out there, to compete, to pay the bills. I think that has a lot to do with it. But, and they hype it up. But, you know, I was reading in the New York Times this morning, there's a Harvard professor, black Harvard professor, brilliant guy, one of the youngest full professors at Harvard ever, under 40. And he did an exhaustive study that showed, that looked at the use of violence against blacks and whites by the police, how much more likely were blacks to be handcuffed, for example, or frisked and what have you. And in all of those factors, the blacks were percentages more likely to have these things happen. But when it came down to being shot by the police, percentage-wise, not even in absolute numbers, because there's a different percentage of population, but he found that they were about equally likely to be shot between blacks and whites. But the media would never report it that way.
Perceptions aren't that way. But you know, especially in the last 50 years, there's been a lot of teaching by our government and the demagogues that you're a victim if you're not doing well. It was somebody else's fault. It isn't one's own purpose. Overcoming some obstacles, which may be very unfair, but some people are able to do it, others not. Some people just dwell on this. And then we have the professional demagogue that makes a living at it, even in government and out of government, that, you know, I'm going to stir it up and I'm going to get you more stuff and you need more money and you need all of this. And it's all done with the violation of rights. And the government's supposed to be there to protect our rights, and yet it's the violation of these rights and the use of force to try to mold society by the government.
And then you have a marginalized member of society who may have some mental problems. We don't know if he was on psychotropic drugs after coming back from Afghanistan. We've seen it in a lot of cases that they've come and they've sought treatment for PTSD and depression, and that's actually made things worse. We don't know if that's a factor in this either, but you do have this vulnerable sector of society that's marginalized in terms of their mental health and other things.
You know, I think that so many of these school shootings, which haven't been related to jihadists or at least implied jihadists, have been on psychotropic drugs. And I don't have much respect for those drugs or the doctors who prescribe all these drugs, but so often they have been on these drugs, and that's a major thing. And that's especially true of people who've been in the military. That's why that was one of the first things I suspected. The guy's been in the military. He's been to Afghanistan, although he didn't see combat. Combat is all around, and people get blown up in trucks and, you know, all kinds of things. And that might have been a stressful thing for him, but he could be on drugs. I'd like, maybe someday we'll find that out. But you know, on the issue of violence, one writer that we quote frequently is Bastiat, makes this point that if you and I aren't allowed to do anything, we can't take from our neighbor just because we want, and we can't rob, steal or hurt people, and governments shouldn't be able to do that too. And of course, that's a good principle, but it's hardly ever followed. Governments think they're above the law. So when governments accept the principle that they can initiate force, taxation, regulations, wars going on, preemptive war, all the molding that they want to do and to tell people what their personal habits should be, and it just goes on and on, they use force for what they want. Why shouldn't the individual then go to the extent saying, well, maybe not consciously, but subconsciously, they realize, well, you have to take what you need or deserve. And they're willing to use force. I don't think they have any moral remorse about it. I don't think they say, oh, I shouldn't have done that. And even when the killing occurs, governments, the police are killing people, so we need to kill people. And, of course, that cycle has to be broken up. And if, you know, it would be hard for one policy change, but there's one principle that could be changed. The world would be a much better place off if we had the maximum number, not quite, maybe we'll never get them all, if we had the maximum number of people that would know and understand what the non-aggression principle is, that you cannot initiate force or violence against somebody else, even if they follow rules in their social life that you find abhorrent, but if they do it and it's only harmful to themselves, you don't have the right to come in and tell them what they have to do. Same way in economics. Why should the government have this right to interfere on an economic transaction, what you pay for what you pay people to work for and what the conditions are, and on? It's your money. You should be able to spend it. And just in social matters, social associations are done with two adults agreeing on it. And if there is, there's no violence used. They should be that in economic matters. And internationally, boy, wouldn't that be wonderful if we would lead the charge? Because right now we're leading the charge to preemptive war. And that, of course, is very, very dangerous and participates it in too, because it's a use of violence. And then it transmits to people coming home. Some of these people who have been security officers overseas come home and they get on our police force. Mm-hmm. And they like the militarization of our police. You know, they like these tanks and all these things. So this, I think the problem in the inner city is a reflection. The bad economic policies, the poverty, which is unfairly directed at a certain group, and this mentality that everybody's entitled to be taken care of. It's a fertile field for more violence. And I cling to my sense of optimism because I still talk to a lot of young people. Mm. And they like this idea of self-reliance. You know, you mean I could be self-reliant? I could keep what I earn? I could work hard? Mm-hmm. Government's, of course, not going to have money when I get Social Security and all these things, that they sort of like this. But you don't hear much about it. Unfortunately, you didn't hear much about it this time. The students who got attention this time were the ones who were flocking to, I want more government socialism, you know. And that, of course, is sad. But that doesn't mean there aren't still a lot of people out there that love the idea of personal liberty.
Yeah, that's true. But it is troublesome, this polarization of society. You know,
That's for sure. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. And this is obviously a very important issue. It's more than the shooting in Dallas or Orlando and the various places. It's more than just the liberals attacking gun ownership. And it's a lot more than the solution coming from, well, if it's a Muslim that did it, it's radical Muslim jihad that did it. So therefore, we have to continue the war against Islam in a blanket fashion. It's much more than that. It is the initiation of force that government starts it off with. The inequality that is something that might be present in a free society, but the degree of inequality, when you see the middle class being wiped out and the rich getting the benefits from the Federal Reserve, this is very insightful to a lot of people. So really, one of the solutions to this problem is understanding economics from the Austrian viewpoint and understanding how free markets work and how it's based on a moral principle of individual liberty and honest money and limited government to protect our rights. So the answers are out there. And unfortunately, we're not getting any help from the media because they stir the pot. This happens, and they love it. They like to paint it as racism and guns and different things, and encouraging the government guns to be in charge, and the people not even have the right to defend themselves. So the answers are out there. It's found in the cause of liberty. I hope we can continue to promote that cause. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.